Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. And the host and founder and guiding spirit of this program is a marvelous lady named Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And she'll be talking with Bruce Allen Murphy, and that's coming up in a moment. But looking ahead at this hour, we'll also be joined by our senior correspondent Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, who's going to tell us a little bit about what's being discussed in the media on stations such as the one you're listening to now. And then our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman will be with us, and he'll be talking with Dr. Damon Raskin. He's an anti-aging specialist and medical director of Ageless Men's Health, and he's going to talk to Steve about male menopause and whether or not men actually do go through it. So that's coming up. Also, Steve is going to discuss tax benefits for boomers taking care of their parents. So we got an information-packed hour ahead for you, so stick around. Now, let's get rolling. Here's Carol Marks in conversation with Bruce Allen Murphy. Bruce Allen Murphy is a judicial biographer, and he's a scholar of American constitutional law and politics. He's the Fred Morgan Kirby Professor of Civil Rights at Lafayette College in Pennsylvania, and he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Scalia, A Court of One, published by Simon & Schuster.
Now, you're a professor, and you teach American constitutional law, among other things, and you've written two other biographies about controversial justices. So, what got you interested in writing a biography about Supreme Court Justice Scalia? And did you find it difficult to be fair and impartial when your views on the Constitution are different from his?
That's a big question, and I'll try and cover it as briefly as I can. My journey to writing about the Supreme Court dates back to my grandfather, who was a stock advisor and who loved books. He used them to decorate his house. And when I went to college, I intended to be a law student. I went to the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, very near where you are now. And I wanted to become a law student, and I changed my mind when I watched a professor teach his pre-law class, a fellow named Dean Alfons, Jr., and he pointed me in the direction of a biography of Chief Justice Harlan Fisk Stone by Alpheus Thomas Mason of Princeton, and I got it into my head that what I wanted to do with my life was teach students in the classroom and teach people through my writing, and I learned from the Harlan Fisk Stone book that if you did biographies of justices, you could teach people about the justice, but you could also teach them about the institution. So that started me on this journey of writing about the Supreme Court to teach general audience by writing biographies. And then I got interested in justices who were active off the court. My first book was about Felix Frankfurter and Louis Brandeis, and then I wrote about Abe Fortas, and I wrote about William O. Douglas, and all of them went beyond their job in the writing of opinions to give speeches and try to write legislation and write books and try to do things off the bench. That led me to the modern era. And so we're with Antonin Scalia, who is the most active extrajudicially justice in the history of the country. He is probably the most controversial in our era and maybe with Douglas in the entire history of the court. And you raise a wonderful question that I had to face when I did my work on William Douglas. How do you spend, in that case, 15 years, and in the Scalia book, 8 years, a total of 23 years with these two people, how do you go about doing that, and how do you remain as fair as possible? And I think the answer is that your job is to try to see your subject through the eyes and the reading of the people who are going to buy your book and to look at your book. And so you try to treat them with a certain arm's length. You basically are living with these people, and you're trying to understand them. And I do it sort of clinically. I look at them through a kind of life cycle approach. How do these human beings evolve through time? and I try to tell this narrative of how these human beings get to the court and how they evolve on the court and what kinds of things they're trying to accomplish and what is their legacy on the court. And when you approach your writing that way, you start to view them as friends, almost as relatives of a sort, almost like an uncle, and you're trying to explain, and then eventually you're trying to predict what that person is going to do. And I've found that when you do writing that way, when you do research that way, it, being fair is very easy. It's and it's a very enjoyable kind of process to take this journey along with the character in your book.
Well, I got to say, you gave a wonderful answer to my question. And talking about learning about your subjects, you know, you usually start with their growing up and that kind of thing. But what did you observe about him in college that I found, you know, quite different, because he seemed to have almost two different personalities?
You have hit the central part of the book, and I'm glad you asked this question the way you did, because you're right. You would think logically that the way you research a person's life is you would start at the beginning. Let me go back and find out how Scalia was raised as the only child of his entire extended family's generation, the only nephew, the only grandchild, the only child. What must it have been like in an immigrant Italian family in the New York area to have been doted on by all of these people? And you would think that that would be the way to start your book. But the truth was, I started like all researchers on the court would probably start. I ended up starting in the middle, and here's why. If you deal with a justice who is deceased, the very first thing you're going to read are the obituaries of that justice, because the most extensive information that you will find in a short amount of space will be in the obituaries. But if you are dealing with a living justice, the obituaries obviously haven't been written yet. So you go to the articles that are written about the justice when that person is appointed to the court, because then you've got people saying, well, here's how this person got to the court. And then these people are predicting. Now, based on that, I can tell you with great certainty, this is what the individual is going to be on the court. This is what to expect. And so I read all these articles from all of these different lawyers, from all of these different professors, from all sides of the ideological spectrum, from people who loved Scalia, who did not like Scalia, who didn't know much about Scalia, who had researched Scalia, and to a person they said, he will be one of the most successful political justices on the court. He will be the William Brennan of the right. Brennan amassed the Warren Court liberals in the 1960s. He was the lieutenant for Earl Warren. And he made sure they wrote law the way that Earl Warren wanted to, in a liberal direction. And so everyone was looking at Scalia's past, and they were saying, he's going to be this amazing, gregarious, friendly, charismatic person who's going to bring these older conservatives together, and you will see a powerful voting coalition under William Rehnquist for the conservatives that will change America. Well, all of your listeners know that's the description of the court now, and that's the description of the court since 2006, when you had Samuel Alito replacing Sandra Day O'Connor and John Roberts replacing William Rehnquist. But that was not the description of the court for about 20 years, from 1986 to 2006. In fact, the court was very fractured. And what I discovered trying to explain those articles, I went right back to his college years, as you say, and discovered, in fact, there were two people using the name Scalia at Georgetown. The first person I got to know was Nino Scalia. He was a championship college debater, and I remembered when I was at UMass Amherst debating Georgetown and what a thrill it was to know that I was debating one of the great teams in the country with such a legendary history. So this struck me that, oh my goodness, here you have this justice who was one of the leading members at Georgetown. In fact, he was maybe the best college debater of his generation. He was almost unbeatable. And he was reported on in the newspaper as Nino Scalia. And I know a little bit about championship debaters. I lost a lot of debates to championship debaters, and they are a ruthless bunch. They're fantastically skilled argumentatively. They use ad hominem personal attack. They call everybody by their last name. And they can rattle off jokes really quickly, and it's like a really tough intellectual chess game. And that is the Scalia that we know now. And that's the Scalia that we come to understand publicly. But as I read on in the newspapers, there was another Scalia. He was named Tony Scalia by the reporters. He was the actor, a very dramatic, charismatic, gregarious fellow who everyone loved. And it was the same man. He had two different sides of his personality. And I came to understand very early in my research, the person that Ronald Reagan thought he was putting on the court, the person that everybody was writing about when Scalia was appointed to the court, was Tony Scalia. That's the way he was when he was on the Court of Appeals. That's the way he was when he was in the Ford and Nixon administrations. That's who they expected to come on the court and be the William Brennan of the right. But from the very first moment that he got on the court, he was in fact Nino Scalia, and he was going to do everything he could to win at all cost. And if it meant driving people away and being defeated in terms of votes, but making his points politically, that's the way he was going to be.
That's Bruce Allen Murphy in conversation with Carol Marks. He's a judicial biographer and scholar of American constitutional law and politics. The book that he's discussing with Carol Marks is titled Scalia, A Court of One. It's published by Simon & Schuster. And we'll continue with this interview, Carol Marks, talking to author Bruce Allen Murphy, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is the host of the program, Carol Marks, beginning part two of her interview with Bruce Allen Murphy, the judicial biographer and scholar of American constitutional law and politics. His book is titled Scalia, A Court of One, published by Simon & Schuster.
His whole philosophy, he calls it originalism, is all about the Constitution and that we need to interpret it the way it originally was interpreted by the people who wrote the Constitution. And I wanted to ask about that, you know, about the two personalities, because do you think that his ideas have influenced the Supreme Court arguments, but in a way they haven't predicted or they're not responsible for their outcome, because a lot of the outcomes have been surprising.
Yeah, you've really hit on something here about his theory. He, in 86, when he was basically lobbying for the court, giving a speech right before the appointment was going to be made, he came up with an idea that he could do something a little different from the other major competitor for the position. That was Robert Bork, who was also in the Court of Appeals. Robert Bork and Scalia were reacting to the 1960s Earl Warren era. They were reacting to people like William O. Douglas. There was an idea that what you had on the court were living, evolving constitutionalists. Douglas, William Brennan, Earl Warren all believed this. They were willing to look at the Constitution, reduce it to its core values, and ask, how have generations of judges changed the meaning of the Constitution over time through their precedents, through the things that have happened in this country? Let's talk about what the Constitution means now as opposed to what the Constitution meant then. Bork said what we need to do instead is limit the power of judges to create rights and put them in the Constitution. Limit the power of judges to expand rights. And so what we need to do is we need to go in an intellectual time machine, go back to when the Constitution was written, and ask what would the writers of the Constitution think these rights would mean. Scalia wanted to differentiate himself from that, and he said, no, I'm not going to be so limited in that way. I, too, will take you in an intellectual time machine as a judge, but I will go back to what the people in the ratifying conventions for the Constitution in 1788 or for the Bill of Rights in 1791. What did they think those words meant? What did it mean in the dictionaries of the time? What did it mean in the newspapers of the time? What did it mean in the letters of the time? What did the Federalist Papers say? What Scalia is trying to do is he's trying to find a way, now this is his theory, find a way to limit the power of the judges. But what you discover very early on, and then you see it evolve over time, is that Scalia starts out that way, and then he comes to understand the more historical documents and pieces of evidence I can add, the way that I can pick and choose my evidence, I can reach the result that I want to reach, whatever that is. So you can have a conservative originalist like Scalia who would say these rights don't exist, we're going to restrict these rights. But you can also have a liberal originalist, like maybe David Souter, or at times Stephen Breyer does this, or there are people in law schools who do this. And what they do is they say, I will use the same process, and what I will do is I will expand rights. Now, one of the interesting things, Carol, is that nobody on the court other than Scalia and Clarence Thomas is truly an originalist. No one else is doing it. None of the major historians of our time in the founding era agree that this process is an acceptable academic pursuit. Everybody on the court will put history in their opinions to try to show I've covered this base. This is where I'm going to go. But when you see Scalia do this, you understand that what he is doing is trying to reach the result that he wants to reach through this process that he's developed. So, As you intimate in your question, in the most recent case dealing with the Hobby Lobby Corporation and the free exercise of religion, you would have to believe that the framers of the Constitution were writing the Constitution and the Bill of Rights for corporations as well as people, that they, in fact, were worried about protecting corporate rights. And you would have to believe that the framers of the Constitution, Jefferson and Madison, who wrote the First Amendment, who believed there should be a high wall of separation between church and state, actually wanted to lower that wall for the corporations who wanted to do what they wanted to do regardless of what the federal government wants to do. And then when that didn't work out, they would then ask to raise the wall again so that they could nullify a portion of the federal law and do what they wanted under their religious beliefs. Originalism apparently allows Scalia to do that, to write one way in 1990, dealing with Native Americans ingesting peyote in Oregon, and to vote a different way in 2014, dealing with the Hobby Lobby and whether or not they will follow the Affordable Care Act. I think what you see here is a very flexible process that is not as advertised when it was first created. It's not a hard and fast limiting technique for judges.
Very, you know, very interesting. And I do think that one result of having Judge Scalia on the court and his aggressive style is that the general public sees the Supreme Court in less of a neutral or nonpartisan way when
this
it makes decisions.
This is a major problem, and you're exactly right. When the court considered the Affordable Care Act, 75% of the people who answered a public survey said they expected the court to decide as politicians rather than judges. It has been true going back as long as the Gallup polls have been done that when people are asked, how would you rank your level of trust in these institutions, the military, ministers, the president, Congress, car salesmen, whatever, the Supreme Court has always been at the very top. They've always gotten in the middle 60% of very much support for what they do. The most recent poll that I saw, it had been cut in half to 30%.
Wow.
One of the things that has happened is, as Stephen Breyer has said, the court has become seen as junior varsity politicians. They're seen as a smaller version of Congress, 9 people, split 5 Republicans, outvoting 4 Democrats. And the general public, which is trying to understand what the court does, and the court doesn't make that terribly easy, they understand counting to 9. They understand when there's a split based on partisanship, and they don't like it. And one of the things that my daughter has noticed is that Facebook exploded and Twitter exploded against the court after these most recent decisions. People understand that corporations are not people. And people understand that these kinds of encounters on the sidewalk are not necessarily counseling. Sometimes they're harassment. You're not going to fool the American people. And so, yes, you're right. The court is now seen as a highly polarized, partisan, political institution, as opposed to the independent judiciary trying to be fair to both sides.
That's Bruce Allen Murphy in conversation with Carol Marx. The book is titled Scalia, A Court of One, published by Simon & Schuster. Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine joins us next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this time each week, as is customary here on A Touch of Gray, by our senior correspondent Kevin Casey, who's also the vice president and executive editor of two trade publications that service the radio industry. One is Talkers Magazine at Talkers.com, which is, of course, the talk radio trade, and one that I'm sure you've heard of. And as a talk radio listener, maybe you're less familiar with RadioInfo.com, which is a trade publication online that serves the professionals in the music radio industry. And Kevin, you're the executive editor of both trades. Let's talk a little bit about the music side of radio and take a what we're going to talk. Let's sing about this.
Yeah.
Let's sing about music radio. Well, first of all, Radio Info had a very interesting photo recently of two extremely unlikely people.
Yeah.
Now, both of them, when I looked at the picture, I had to stop for a second and go, who are these people? I didn't recognize either of them. One was Lady Gaga as herself.
Right.
I mean, I never really stopped and thought. I like Lady Gaga, but I don't follow television aspect of it that much, and I don't read that much about, you know, these people. So I off the top of my head, I picture Lady Gaga in outrageous get-ups.
Right.
And the other was a fellow who looked like a mature gentleman, extremely handsome, with perfect hair and a tan and a beautiful suit or a tux. And it turned out to be, as I thought, Tony Bennett. Now, Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga are an unusual pair. And plus, neither of them looked like... Well, I don't even know. I don't know what Tony Bennett looks like either. He seems to have had a little work lately, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would say. You know, Tony Bennett's one of those guys who... He looks different every time you see him, but he also never seems to age.
Maybe know? That's why he looks different. Maybe he has different levels of... I don't know. Do you think he was wearing a hair helper?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, Tony Bennett always had a good head of hair, so you don't know what it's supposed to look like now.
Yeah, and, you know, but it looked like him, but Lady Gaga just looked like a person. I mean, she just looked like a lady as opposed to a Gaga. And, I don't know what makes her tick. She certainly has made some of the most exciting pop music in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I like her stuff. But you're always reading that her fans either love her and they're defending her against her critics, or she's finished, or she's gone off over the top, or it's like I almost feel she's sort of David Bowie-esque. If you remember David Bowie, where they control their own press, even their own demise.
Yes. Yes.
David Bowie, I think, used to delight in that. And then he'd come back strong with a different look and a different sound and a different style. Point being, what were those two doing together?
Yeah, well, as some of our listeners may be aware, they got together and they put out a record of American standards. And it's, you know, all the classics that you would expect them to do. The record is chock full of the kinds of songs you'd expect to hear Tony Bennett sing if you went to see him in concert. Only you have this lovely young lady who has a fabulous singing voice joining him and doing these great duets. And, you can accuse pop stars of manufacturing this sort of thing as a gimmick, but she says straight up that she loves this music. It's something that she grew up with. She comes from a musical family, and I'm sure she heard this stuff as a kid, and it's a part of her the musical world in which she lives, which goes far beyond just the kind of pop music she does every album.
Yeah, well, I mean, people who program radio have to keep that in mind, although they don't often do that, that people usually have more experience about music beyond the particular genre or format that their age group is stereotypically into or that the radio station specializes in doing. Now, in this case, the area of music that you're discussing is called the Great American Songbook. And those are basically hits of the 40s and the 50s that cross-faded with the big band era. But the Great American Songbook is not exclusively the big band era. It's songs.
Right.
And Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, people of that ilk, Dean Martin, the songs of Cole Porter,
right.
All of that, and those are great songs, and they hold up, they'll always hold up, so I have to salute someone like Lady Gaga for doing that, and if nothing else, it shows her versatility and her pipes.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of time left, we only have about 20 seconds. I just want to say, without sounding like a person who's a Luddite, a lot of the young singers today can't hit the notes, but the computers make them sing on pitch and on tune, which, of course, the great singers of the past didn't have that benefit. We'll talk more about that in coming weeks. Kevin, thank you for joining us. Kevin Casey is the Executive Vice President of Talkers at Talkers.com and Radio Info at RadioInfo.com. He's a regular part of our program. I'm Michael Harrison. Steve Wiseman's next on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way, as promised, by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. He's in conversation now with Dr. Damon Raskin. Dr. Damon Raskin is an anti-aging specialist and medical director of Ageless Men's Health, and will discuss male menopause and whether or not men go through it.
We're all familiar with menopause, which is obviously misnamed. It should be womenopause. But Dr. Raskin, is there the equivalent of menopause for men?
Well, yes and no. Women have it easy because we kind of have some demarcations that make it very well known when a woman is going through menopause. We start.
Wait a minute. Go back again. You said women has it. You're taking risks here. Women have it easy. Okay.
Well, they have it easy in the fact that you know when there is menopause because periods stop, and it's a very easy thing to see that you're not bleeding every month. Whereas in men, you have oftentimes a very slow, gradual decline in the male hormone, testosterone. But by the time men reach the age of, say, 65, over half of men may have low testosterone and not even know it.
Hmm. Now, what are some of the symptoms?
Well, it's funny because the symptoms are a little bit mysterious and can be multiple different things. Sometimes it's just fatigue. Men just don't have the same energy as before as they used to, and they just say, well, it's just because I'm getting older. Obviously, decrease in sex drive or interest in sex, libido, they're not able to have an erection like they used to. It's not as strong. But other things can happen as well. You see less muscle mass. You see more irritability. You can actually be depressed, and sometimes low testosterone can mask as actual depression, and people are put on antidepressants without being checked for low testosterone.
Well, hell, not even getting the erections enough to get you depressed.
Well, that's true as well.
How do you test for it?
Well, it's easy. It's just a simple blood test. A little bit of blood is a good screening test. You just ask your doctor to check you for testosterone, and then we do it in the morning because there's sort of a variation in testosterone in the morning and the evening, so it's always recommended to check it in the morning when it's at its highest.
Oh,
and
that's
interesting. And then if that is low, and there's a range, that there's a reference range, and if it's on the low end and men have symptoms, then it's worth doing some secondary testing. So you never want to just go with one reading. You want to come back, talk to the doctor, get some secondary readings as well, some more advanced testing, and if that is again low and you have symptoms, then it's worth talking to your doctor about getting treated.
What kind of treatments are there?
Oh, well, there's a lot of treatments out there, and there's more coming, which is always nice. Right now, testosterone can be treated with gels, where you just rub on like a gel or lotion once a day, usually in the morning on your upper chest. There's one that actually goes under your arm. You may have seen some ads for that on TV. There's one that goes on your inner thigh. There's also shots that people will get, either weekly or every 10 to 14 days. There's a patch that you can put on your skin. And they're in development for some oral medications, but right now there's nothing orally that you can take.
What are the side effects of some of these?
So the testosterone is something that you want to be monitoring carefully. So if you are having too much testosterone, then we start worrying about mood changes, irritability, aggression, for example. There's other risk factors. There's some studies to show an association with prostate cancer and increase the size of the prostate, so that has to be monitored carefully. The liver has to be monitored carefully. And even the heart has to be monitored carefully. Too much testosterone can increase the amount and the thickness of your blood, and if your blood gets too thick, that can lead to stroke. So again, this is not something that you just don't want to monitor. You just want to slap a patch on and say goodbye. You want to be monitoring these things very, very carefully.
You know, which leads me to my concern with, I'll see ads on television and on the radio about various kinds of products that people do for themselves without a physician, and my initial response is that's not the kind of thing you want to mess with on your own. Am I correct, or am I being
You're absolutely correct. I mean, you'll find, and I see it in my practice too, especially when young guys, bodybuilders, for example, will not get their testosterone, say, from the doctor. They'll get it from their buddies in the gym and not getting blood tests and not getting monitored. This can be very, very dangerous if you do it that way. But you always have to look at the symptoms of the patient. You always have to look at the risks of the drug and the benefits of the drug. And if the patient's getting benefit, then you have to look, hey, does this outweigh the possible risks? And is this an improvement in the quality of life? And that's what I emphasize in my practice is I want to get my patients feeling better. And as long as they understand the risks and they come in and monitor themselves regularly, then I think I'm doing them a very good service.
And is any of this covered by insurance?
Oh, absolutely. Low testosterone is a real condition with real symptoms. And if patients have health insurance, then these blood tests get covered. The medications can get covered depending on their plan. But absolutely, this is not just a cosmetic or a beautiful condition. This is actually a real medical disease. In fact, there are certain associations that you should know about, too, with low testosterone. People are more likely to have it if you have other conditions like diabetes, for example. So diabetics have a very high prevalence of low testosterone. And that's something that you need to know. But also people who are overweight have a much higher incidence of low testosterone. So if you have some of these risk factors, you should get checked.
And where can people go for more information about this?
Oh, well, you can go on my website, which is DamonRaskinMD.com. That's DamonRaskinMD.com. But you can look up, you know, low testosterone in any of the medical websites like WebMD, and they have some good information as well.
Well, you know, it's good to get some, as I say, really good information out there because, you know, from you, Dr. Raskin, because there's so much misinformation with some of the ads and again, even when you're dealing with these ads, it's a matter of the stuff you're administering yourself, you don't know what's in there or where it came from, do you?
Oh, absolutely. You just don't want to go to the health food store and buy some supplements that make you promises. They don't tell you about the risks, and these things are unregulated, and you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
So I don't encourage that. I encourage getting checked by a regular medical doctor. If you have symptoms or if you think you could have a condition, get it checked out and get treated if you need to.
Dr. Damon Raskin in conversation with our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman here on A Touch of Gray. Dr. Raskin is an anti-aging specialist and medical director of Ageless Men's Health. And he's talking a bit there about male menopause and whether or not it really exists. If you want more information, go to agelessmenshealth.com. Steve Wiseman will return in the next segment. He will discuss tax benefits for boomers taking care of their parents. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment. We'll be right back.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and more conversation with Steve Wiseman. Steve is an expert on so many of the topics we talk about, and he's also one of the nation's leading experts on scams and fraud. As a matter of fact, he has a new book that's just getting rave reviews. It's called Identity Theft Alert. Identity Theft Alert. It's published by Prentice Hall. Steve's here now to discuss tax benefits for boomers taking care of their parents. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, when we were kids, our parents took care of us. But now with many aging parents, and I know a lot of our listeners are aging baby boomers, and as much as we're feeling our aches and pains, we've got parents, many of whom are still around, and they need our help. So turnabout seems to be fair game. But, you know, the federal government provides a number of tax benefits for children who are taking care of their parents' care. And these include the medical expense tax deduction. So children who are paying for a parent's health care can take an itemized deduction for qualifying medical expenses to the extent those costs and their own medical costs exceed 10% of the child's adjusted gross income, although that's even lowered to 7.5% if the child is 65 or older. Now, qualifying medical expenses include those prescribed by a licensed healthcare practitioner, necessary, preventative, therapeutic, these kinds of things, and even maintenance and personal care services. It can make sense in some instances for the parent to actually transfer assets to the child and for the child to use them to pay for the parent's care, especially if the parent is in a much lower tax bracket. There's also medical flexible spending accounts. A lot of workers are eligible for medical flexible spending accounts where they can set aside some of their earnings for medical expenses prior to paying taxes on them. And adult children who have this benefit at work are able to pay for up to $2,500 of medical care for their parents using pre-tax dollars. Now, depending on the adult child's marginal tax rate, using the flexible spending account saves the family about $1,000 a year. So it's, again, something that really can make sense. There also are dependent care tax breaks. Child can also elect to enroll in a dependent care account, pay for up to $5,000 of dependent care expenses for the parent using pre-tax dollars. Finally, they can also, you know, our parents took us as dependents. Well, now we can take our parents as dependents. The child can treat a parent as a dependent and take the standard deduction. Last year it was $3,900. Just as they would a dependent child. If the parent lives with the child for at least half the year, child pays for at least half of the parent's support, the parent doesn't file a joint tax return with anyone else, and the parent's taxable income is less than the amount of the standard deduction of $3,900. So if the senior's sole income is Social Security, it's not even counted as taxable income. So there are a lot of different tax benefits that can be taken advantage of for we aging boomers taking care of aging parents. The most important thing is talk with your lawyer or your accountant about that, and you may get a little bit of a break.
Thank you very, very much, Steve Wiseman, also known as Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. And don't forget his new book, published by Prentice Hall, Identity Theft Alert. And that goes along with many of his books, such as The Truth About Avoiding Scams, also published by Prentice Hall, and his website, scamicide.com. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Beverly Santinella, on the front line, putting it all together. And thank you, of course, to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.